This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. Ukraine's president says Russian forces launched a rocket attack on a train station in central Ukraine on the country's Independence Day Wednesday, killing 22 people. The lethal strike came after warnings from President Volodymyr Zelensky in recent days that the Russians might try to do something particularly cruel this week. Wednesday is a national holiday in Ukraine commemorating the country's declaration of independence from Soviet Union in 1991. It also marks the six-month point in the war against Russia. U.S. President Joe Biden marked Ukraine's Independence Day by announcing long-term aid for its security. AP Washington correspondent Saga Magani reports.
The president calls it America's biggest tranche of security aid so far, nearly $3 billion in weapons and equipment aimed at ensuring Ukraine can defend itself for the long term. Earlier aid packages were focused on more immediate needs in what is now a six-month-old war with Russia. Officials say this package will fund contracts for drones and other weapons that may not reach the battlefield for a year or two. As he notes, both the six-month mark and Ukrainian independence. The president says in a written statement it's bittersweet, but also an affirmation that Ukraine proudly remains its own country. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A judge has ruled Mexico's former attorney general, who oversaw the original investigation in 2014's disappearance of 43 students from a radical teachers' college, will go on trial on charges of forced disappearance, torture, and official misconduct. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. By remote, this is VOA News. The U.S. military said it carried out airstrikes in eastern Syria. We get more on that story from AP correspondent Karen Chalmers.
U.S. military authorities said the strikes were on areas used by militias that were backed by Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard. Opposition war monitor, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, and an activist group said the airstrikes targeted the Ayash camp, which is made up of Shiite fighters from Afghanistan. A U.S. military spokesman said the strikes were necessary to protect and defend U.S. personnel. The spokesman also added that the attack was in response to an earlier attack by Iranian-backed militias that targeted a garrison used by American forces on August 15th. I'm Karen Chamas.
The Uvalde, Texas school board on Wednesday fired the school district's embattled police chief for his much-criticized handling of the shooting rampage that killed 19 children and two teachers in the city 3 months ago. The Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District Board of Trustees voted unanimously to fire Pete Arredondo. He had been on unpaid administrative leave since shortly after the May 24th shooting at Robb Elementary School. Parents of children slain and wounded in the deadliest U.S. school shooting in nearly a decade had demanded the school board dismiss Arredondo. President Biden has appointed a new Secret Service director. We get more on the story from Lisa Dryer.
President Joe Biden has named Kim Cheadle, who's a veteran Secret Service official, as the agency's next director. Her appointment comes as the agency faces controversy over missing text messages around the time that thousands of supporters of then-President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol. She takes over as congressional committees and the Homeland Security's internal watchdog are investigating the missing messages. The Secret Service has said that those messages were purged during a technology transition. Cheadle worked at the Secret Service for 27 years and was the first woman to be named Assistant Director of Protective Operations. That division provides protection for the president and other dignitaries. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
U.S. First Lady Jill Biden has tested positive for COVID-19, again an apparent rebound case after she initially tested negative for the virus over the weekend. The White House said President Biden, who spent 3 days with his wife at their Rehoboth Beach, Delaware vacation home, continues to test negative. He also suffered a rebound case earlier this month after an initial recovery from the virus. Joe Biden has been prescribed the antiviral drug Paxlovid, which has proven to be highly effective at preventing serious disease and death among those at high risk from COVID-19. By remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Thursday, August 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. President Joe Biden announces additional $3 billion in military assistance to Ukraine to counter Russia's attacks.
Well, the Pentagon says it's very important for Ukraine to succeed, and it's very important, the Pentagon says, for the United States to not let Vladimir Putin and Russia get away with this aggression.
Israel vows to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons as U.S. weighs lifting of sanctions.
If a deal is signed, it does not obligate Israel. We will act to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear state. We are not prepared to live with a nuclear threat above our heads.
And the World Food Program warns the number of people facing acute food insecurity has doubled to 345 million. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. President Joe Biden has announced approximately $2.98 billion in assistance to Ukraine, which he said, quote, will allow Ukraine to acquire air defense systems, artillery systems and munitions, counter unmanned aerial systems and radars to ensure it can continue to defend itself over the long run, unquote. This as Ukraine's president said Russian forces launched a rocket attack on a train station in central Ukraine on the country's Independence Day, killing 22 people. The lethal strike Wednesday came after warnings from President Volodymyr Zelensky in recent days that Russia might, in his words, quote, try to do something particularly nasty, something particularly cruel, unquote. The United States has committed approximately $10.6 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the Biden administration in January 2021. Ukrainian President Zelensky expressed his gratitude to the United States for the package. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Bob.
Well, the Pentagon says it's very important for Ukraine to succeed, and it's very important, the Pentagon says, for the United States to not let Vladimir Putin and Russia get away with this aggression. And they say that this latest package is a commitment for the long term. This is not one of the packages that you've seen to supply Ukraine with what it needs right now on the battlefield. This is a $3 billion package, the largest we've ever seen going into Ukraine, and it's going to be contracted out and fulfilled over the long term. We're talking several months to up to 3 years to arrive in Ukraine. And these are the items that the Pentagon says they will need to defend themselves regardless of the outcome of this war.
Looks like the efforts of the United Nations and other countries and other leaders wishing and hoping that this conflict would end soon. Looks like that's not going to happen with this package and the assessment of the Pentagon.
Of course, everyone hopes that there's a peace agreement tomorrow, but you can hope for the best, but you have to always prepare for the worst. That's almost a Pentagon motto here in the halls. And so what they're providing is things that, in worst case scenario, if this escalates, Ukraine will be able to defend themselves in the short term with some of the equipment that the United States is providing, particularly those Gimlers and the HIMARS that are used to defend and are very successful in the battlefield, according to officials here. They say that they've definitely slowed Russia's advances in the east. And then you bring in some of the stuff that's coming in with this package, like those NASAMS, those National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems. Those are the systems we've talked about on this program that actually defend the skies of Washington, D.C. So having those with Ukraine is very important as well. And let's not forget that you mentioned all of these different countries. All of these different countries have been providing equipment to Ukraine, and it's been an all-hands-on-deck sort of experience. That's what Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Kahl told us today during a briefing. And he says that this package will also focus on funding for training and maintenance and sustainment, and will allow Ukraine to focus its weapon systems into fewer and fewer systems, so there's less training involved and there's less equipments to have to keep up with and to maintain, so that they can streamline the equipment to Ukraine in the future, and it will ultimately make them a better fighting force.
Some Pentagon officials are saying Russia is getting desperate, and they're warning Americans who are currently in Ukraine, especially in Kyiv, to maybe think of leaving that country. What is the Pentagon's assessment, and why are they giving out this advisory or warning?
Well, there has been several indications, intelligence-wise, that because Russia is starting to feel a little desperate, that they may try to ratchet up the attacks. And that has been a concern. That's why some Americans have been warned to leave the country, because they don't want Americans to get caught in an escalation of attacks. This is always the case on any war.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. And as Ukraine marks the sixth anniversary of Russia's invasion, VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sen reports on the fallout from the conflict. Millions of refugees have fled the country, food exports have plummeted, and the United Nations is warning the world faces, quote, maximum danger, unquote, over the situation at Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant.
Ukrainians celebrated their Independence Day Wednesday and marked 6 months since Russia invaded their country with a display in Kyiv of seized Russian tanks. President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukrainians will fight for their land until the end.
What is the end of the war for us? We used to say peace. Now we say victory. We will not seek an understanding with the terrorists.
In Moscow, the Kremlin was quiet Wednesday, patrolled by police, with no televised remarks from Russian President Vladimir Putin. Experts say the impact of the war is being felt far beyond Europe, with many places also dealing with extreme droughts this year. Before Russia's invasion, Ukraine was one of the world's leading exporters of corn, wheat, barley, and sunflower oil. Harry Fowler is the U.S. Special Representative for Global Food Security. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
The world was already in a dangerous position prior to the February 24th invasion of Ukraine, but that really pushed us over the edge, and the price hikes in foodstuffs globally really went through the roof immediately after that invasion. So we saw inflation hitting particularly hard in many developing countries, countries that couldn't afford to have suffer through a period of higher prices.
Fowler said the invasion has pushed tens of millions of more people into the category of going to bed hungry at night and worsened food insecurity around the world. In addition, there is concern about a potential nuclear accident at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, which has been under Russian military control since March. Ukraine's State Emergency Service conducted first aid exercises last week to prepare for a potential accident. U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm told VOA the U.S. is very concerned about the safety and security of Europe's largest nuclear plant.
We agree with the demilitarization. There should not be military activities around a nuclear plant, period. It is extremely dangerous. We strongly condemn what Russia has done. We want them to turn the plant control back over to the Ukrainians.
The United Nations says it has confirmed the deaths of more than 5,500 civilians during Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Cindy Sane, VOA News.
The World Food Program's regional director, Corinne Fleischer, says the number of people facing acute food insecurity worldwide has more than doubled to 345 million since 2019 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, conflict, and climate change. Before the coronavirus crisis, 135 million suffered from acute hunger worldwide, Fleischer told Reuters. The numbers have climbed since then and are expected to soar further because of climate change and conflict, especially in the Middle East and Africa.
This region is very import dependent, and also because of its proximity to the Black Sea. It takes 2 months to come across the Atlantic with a vessel. It takes 10 days. So very much impacted by this. Now, the prices have gone up massively across the region. And that results in families not being able to put food on the table in the evening. They just can't afford it anymore. And it results in governments in this region, as you know, there are many large blanket subsidies. Prices for governments are going up massively for this. And then thirdly, you know, when food insecurity and hunger increases, WFP is supposed to be here and support the people. But our prices have gone up, our costs have gone up 45% on average since COVID. Yemen imports 90% of its food needs. Now, with prices going up that massively, more people get hungry.
That's Corinne Fleischer, the WFP's regional director. Israel's prime minister says the West is letting Iran manipulate talks over what it calls an emerging, quote, bad deal, unquote, to curb Tehran's nuclear capabilities. The Israeli caretaker prime minister Yair Lapid told reporters in Jerusalem Wednesday that Israel staunchly opposes any agreement with Iran. He spoke as the Biden administration was expected to consider terms of an agreement as soon as this week. Lapid said such a deal would send billions of dollars to Iran-backed groups that want to eliminate Israel. The United States aims to respond soon to a draft accord proposed by the European Union that would restore the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran, under which it curbed its disputed uranium enrichment program in exchange for sanctions relief.
On the table right now is a bad deal. It would give Iran $100 billion a year. This money will not build schools or hospitals. This is $100 billion a year that will be used to undermine stability in the Middle East and spread terror around the globe. Israel is not against any agreement. We are against this agreement because it is a bad one, because it cannot be accepted as it is written right now. The sweeping removal of sanctions on sectors like banking against financial institutions designated today as supporting terrorism means the Iranians will have no problem whatsoever laundering money. Iran will assist other nations facing sanctions to evade them. We have made it clear to everyone, if a deal is signed, it does not obligate Israel. We will act to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear state. We are not prepared to live with a nuclear threat above our heads.
That's Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid. In other news, an International Monetary Fund team met Sri Lanka's president on Wednesday for talks on a bailout, including restructuring debt of about $29 billion amid the nation's worst financial crisis in more than seven decades. The second such visit in 3 months comes as the Indian Ocean island scrambles to lock down a staff-level pact for a possible $3 billion program. The main sticking point is how to find a sustainable track for Sri Lanka's unwieldy debt, which stood at 114% of GDP at the end of last year. Finance Ministry data shows that Sri Lanka has $9.6 billion in bilateral debt, and its private credit, which includes international sovereign funds, stand at $19.8 billion. For months, the population of 22 million has struggled with soaring inflation, economic contraction, and severe shortage of essential items of food, fuel, and medicine caused by a record slump in foreign reserves. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. This week marks 5 years since more than 700,000 Rohingya refugees fled violence and persecution in Myanmar, joining hundreds of thousands of other Rohingya who had sought refuge in Bangladesh in previous years. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The events that caused nearly 750,000 people to take flight in August 2017 have not improved. Indeed, they have worsened. The United Nations reports Myanmar's military junta has increased its brutal campaign of violence against the population. This since it overthrew the country's democratically elected government a year and a half ago. The UN Refugee Agency estimates 1.1 million Rohingya are internally displaced inside Myanmar, most in Rakhine State. The agency says the repressive conditions under which they live preclude the possibility of safe, dignified, and sustainable refugee returns to Myanmar. Having passed 5 years in exile, The UNHCR reports the latest exodus from Myanmar is now officially defined as being a protracted situation. Refugees who live in this long-lasting state of limbo are dependent on international aid. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says her agency is appealing for increased support for the Rohingya. She says it is critical the international community continues to pay attention to the crisis, which is at risk of being forgotten.
There must be a redoubling of efforts to find solutions for the Rohingya. The longer that these displacement situations protract, it becomes difficult to sustain support. We are facing a funding shortfall. That's really important that international commitment and that funding is sustained to support both the Rohingya refugees, but also their local host communities.
Some 1 million Rohingya refugees, nearly half of them children, live in extremely overcrowded conditions in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh, the world's largest refugee camp. Mantu says the Rohingya remain fully reliant on humanitarian assistance for their survival. She says they need proper nutrition, shelter materials, sanitation, and livelihood opportunities.
Protection needs, especially for women, children, and people with disabilities, are often underreported. Violence against children and women, especially gender-based violence, is shrouded in stigma that can render survivors voiceless and unable to access legal, medical, psychosocial, or other forms of support. Some have resorted to dangerous boat journeys to seek a future for themselves and their children.
The UNHCR says support must be stepped up for education, skills development, and livelihood opportunities to prepare refugees for a hope for eventual return to Myanmar. In the meantime, the agency is appealing for $455 million to provide life-saving assistance this year to more than 1.4 million people, including Rohingya refugees and more than 500,000 most affected host communities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Australia's new Air Force chief has said surveillance missions will continue in the South China Sea, despite what he says has been a, quote, recent spate of unsafe incidents, unquote, in the contested region. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In May, a Royal Australian Air Force surveillance plane was intercepted by a Chinese fighter jet in international airspace claimed by Beijing in the South China Sea region. At the time, officials in Canberra accused Beijing, Australia's biggest trading partner, of intimidation. Since then, bilateral ties have been strained in recent years over various geopolitical, diplomatic and trade disputes. And there have been other as yet unspecified encounters with Chinese forces, according to Air Marshal Robert Chipman, who became the new chief of the Australian Air Force in July 2022. In his first comments to the media, Chipman said the incidents were robust, and he insisted that Australia would continue its maritime surveillance flights over the region. Speaking to reporters in Canberra, he said that despite the recent encounters, Australia didn't expect to see an increase in confrontations with Chinese aircraft near the South China Sea, which is home to vital shipping lanes and has inflamed territorial disputes in the region for years. During a media briefing, Chipman said Beijing has become increasingly assertive in the region.
We think that China has a formidable air and space capability and that they have concentrated that air and space capability in the South China Sea region to deter others from going into that airspace. It doesn't make it impenetrable and it doesn't mean that you can't deliver military effects to achieve your interests when you're operating against China.
Chipman has held talks in Canberra with US Secretary for the Air Force Frank Kendall. Both sides have spoken about tensions around Taiwan and boosting cooperation in the South China Sea. The talks have coincided with Exercise Pitch Black, a three-week international military exercise in northern Australia. This year's event brings together 2,500 personnel and up to 100 military aircraft from around the world, including France, Indonesia, Singapore and the United States. Forces from Germany, Japan and Korea are participating fully for the first time. The military exercises run from August 19 to September 8. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the latest developments regarding the FBI investigation of former U.S. President Donald Trump. His lawyers asked a federal court to temporarily block the agency from reviewing documents recovered from his Florida estate. We'll examine this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. In the run-up to the U.S. midterm elections, a view from Western Pennsylvania. I speak to a leading Democrat and Republican to gauge the political temperature in this key battleground state where analysts say the balance of power in the Senate could be decided. Trump-backed celebrity doctor Republican Mehmet Oz faces Democrat John Fetterman. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than five decades ago, at the height of the Cold War, representatives of 18 nations drafted the Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or NPT. In the years that followed, nearly every country in the world joined the NPT. The NPT has made the world safer as nuclear weapons states took steps to reduce their stockpiles. However, the treaty is under increasing strain, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a speech to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference. He noted that the DPRK continues to expand its unlawful nuclear program and continues its ongoing provocations against the region. Iran also remains on a path of nuclear escalation. Although it publicly claims to favor a return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, since March, Iran has been unwilling to accept such a deal. Secretary Blinken affirmed that getting back to the JCPOA remains the best outcome for the United States, for Iran, for the world. Russia's ongoing war of aggression against Ukraine is a brazen violation of international law, but its actions also violate the assurances that it provided to Ukraine in the 1994 Budapest Memorandum. Under the terms of the memorandum, which welcomed Ukraine's accession to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and its commitment to remove all nuclear weapons from its territory, Russia committed to respect Ukraine's independence and territorial integrity. This sends the worst possible message to countries around the world that may think they need to have nuclear weapons to protect their sovereignty. There is no place in our world for nuclear deterrence based on coercion, intimidation, or blackmail, declared Secretary Blinken.
Together with the United Kingdom and France, we've released a set of principles and best practices that should be expected of every responsible NPT nuclear weapon state, among them that every effort has to be made to ensure that nuclear weapons are not used again.
The United States is committed to avoiding costly arms races and facilitating arms control arrangements wherever they are possible. Indeed, President Biden negotiated to extend the New START treaty with Russia until 2026. President Biden also reiterated his readiness to negotiate a framework to replace New START. The fundamental role of U.S. nuclear weapons is to deter nuclear attacks on the United States, its allies, and partners. The United States would only consider the use of such weapons in extreme circumstances to defend its vital interests.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.